Okay. So summary meaning of Dvadashodhyayaha Bhakti Yoga. Okay, what was the content of 11th chapter?
Vishwarupa Darshana.
Vishwarupa Darshana Yoga. So there in 11th chapter, Vishwarupa Darshana Yoga, Bhagavan showed Arjuna the Vishwarupa. So I explained you the purpose of showing Vishwarupa. We talked about a few of the shlokas in Vishwarupa Sandarshana Yoga. One other purpose of showing Vishwarupa to Krishna, to Arjuna, was to attract Arjuna's attention to what Krishna is teaching. Because in Vishwarupa Darshana Yoga, at one point Arjuna says, Krishna, I have been very casual in terms of approaching you. I did not know your full glory until I witnessed the Vishwarupam. I was thinking you are my friend, you are my brother-in-law, you know, we have grown up together, you know, we are just relatives, we know each other, we can be just casual with each other. I've been calling you with your first name, Hey Krishna, Hey Yadava, Hey Sakheti. That's what Arjuna says. Then after looking, after witnessing the Vishwarupa, now I know what your real glory is. So Vishwarupa Sandarshana Yoga helped Arjuna start paying a more serious attention to what Krishna wants to convey to Arjuna. So just in case Arjuna was not paying attention to all that Krishna has been teaching so far, this Vishwarupa Sandarshana is potentially changing all that. Now Arjuna is paying a lot more attention. He is a lot more serious to what Krishna is saying because now he knows the full glory of Krishna. He says, you are Guru Gariyan. You are the greatest of the gurus I have seen through this Vishwarupam. Tvamasya Pujyasya Guru Gariyan. You are the most worthy of reverence. You are Guru Shreshtaha. You are the Guru of Gurus. I have realized that. So with that, now Arjuna is in full attention to listen and absorb to what Krishna has to say. Now Krishna decides that now is the right time to give him the essence of what all has been taught so far in the form of a summary, in a nutshell. So essentially, strike while the iron is hot. So while Arjuna is very rapt in terms of his attention, now Krishna wants to give him the summary of all that he has taught so far in the 11 chapters. So, in a sense, this chapter 12, Bhakti Yoga, is a summary essence of all the 11 chapters that Krishna has covered so far. So, towards the end of 11th chapter, what is Krishna saying? Look at the last shloka of 11th chapter. Mat karma krita, mat paramaha, mat bhaktaha, sangavarjitaha. Nirvaira sarvabhuteshu yasamameti pandava. So I explained the meaning of this shloka where Krishna is highlighting all the three approaches, all the three yogas, karma yoga, bhakti yoga and jnana yoga. And he he is giving a pathway to how you can reach Krishna's feet. Yasam aam eti pandava, he will reach me. Who mat karma krita, one who does work, only my work. Mat paramaha, one who considers me as the supreme, so one who has surrendered to Bhagavan. Mat bhaktaha, one who develops that ananya bhakti towards Bhagavan. Sangavarjitaha, one who develops detachment. And nirvaira sarvabhuteshu, one who develops the jnanam that everything is sarvam khalvidam brahma atma swarupam only. So such a person can gradually step up and reach me. Yasa maam eti pandava. Now that particular message, now Krishna is explaining in this 12th chapter. The step-by-step process to reach Bhagavan. Why is it called Bhakti Yoga? It is called Bhakti Yoga because now here Bhagavan is more focusing on the Bhakti part. Why? Because Jnana will come later. 13th chapter to 18th chapter onwards, Jnana will come. So one needs to have a firm foundation in bhakti to start developing Jnana. So that is why he is focusing and explaining a lot on bhakti. Now what is Arjuna asking in this chapter? First shloka, evam satata yukta ye bhaktastvam paryupasate ye chapyaksharam avyaktam tesham ke yoga vittamaha. So in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talked about Atma Swarupam. In Sankhya Yoga, he talked about what Atma Swarupam is. Vasanse jirnani yatha vihaya, all those shlokas, he talked about the Atma Swarupam. And towards the end, when it came to the Vishwarupa Sandarshana Yoga, he showed Bhagavan's glory in Saguna Swarupam. With so many hands, with so many feet, with so many heads, with so many eyes. The glory of Bhagavan, Arjuna has seen in Saguna form, with a body. But Krishna already explained to him about Bhagavan's Nirguna form also in terms of Atma Swarupam. Now, Arjuna is asking, okay, you are saying Matkarma Krita, Matparamaha, Madbhaktaha, Sangavarjitaha. So you are saying, become my bhakta, be devoted to me, do my work. And if you are saying me, who is this me? Who are you really? Are you the Saguna Paramatma or the Nirguna Paramatma? Are you the Paramatma that you have explained to me in second chapter, Sankhya Yoga? Or are you the Paramatma that I have seen in the Vishwarupam in the 11th chapter? Who are you really? And which form should I worship? Should I worship the Saguna form or the Nirguna form? What is best for me? You please tell me. That is what Arjuna is asking in the first shloka. Then Bhagavan is saying, Maya Veshya Mano Yemam Nityayukta Upasate Shraddhaya Parayopetaha Teme Yukta Tama Mataha. Teme Yukta Tama Mataha. So he is saying, for those people who have a body, which means for all of us, the easiest way to reach me is Saguna Upasana. Saguna Upasana means worshipping Bhagavan with Rupam, with Gunam, with all the Kalyana Gunas. Why? Because mind is always looking for something. It looks for a form, it looks for a name, it looks for some kind of a characteristic. Otherwise, mind cannot be focused. For a mind to be focused on an abstract form, it needs to be evolved a lot. The mind needs to be fully evolved, and not many people have a fully evolved and pure mind to focus on Nirguna Swarupa. So, for 99% of the people, Saguna Upasana is recommended. And that is what Bhagavan is saying. Then, let us look at Shloka 5. Kleshodhika tarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta higatir dukham dehavadbhiravapyate. Avyakta hi gatir dukham kleshodhika tarastesham. Being devoted to an avyakta parabrahman, akshara parabrahman, nirguna brahman is kleshodhika taram. It's very difficult for people who are not qualified enough, who have not developed the highest qualities required for the Vedanta sadhana, directly going and pursuing Nirguna Brahma Upasana is extremely difficult. They will fail. So that's why you start slow. You start at the basics. That's what Krishna is saying. And what are the basics? Shloka 6. Yetu sarvani karmani mayi sanyasya matparaha ananyenaiva yogena mam dhyayanta upasate. What is the easiest way to start performing sadhana? To reach Bhagavan. Yetu sarvani karmani mayi sanyasya matparaha. Whatever you do, offer it to Bhagavan. That is the easiest way to start with. What you do, whatever you do, either with your mind or with your speech or with your body, offer it to Bhagavan. Matparaha. And put your mind in me. Put your thoughts on me. Be my bhakta. Ananyenaiva yogena mam dhyayanta upasate. Do upasana of me with ananya bhakti. With one-pointed devotion. That everybody can start doing. All it needs is a change in outlook. I am not doing it for myself. I don't need anything for myself. I am doing it for Bhagavan. Bhagavan will give me whatever I require. That is relatively easier to understand and implement rather than going towards a Nirguna Brahma Upasana. Then what will I give if they do that? Tesham aham samuddharta mrityu samsara sagarat bhavami nachirat partha mayya veshita chetasam. For such people, I will bhavami nachirat. I will always stay with them and help them out. And samuddharta mrityu samsara sagarat. I will lift them up from this mrityu samsara. How? It will come later. Next, okay. But, for example, you want to offer all karmas to Bhagavan. And you want to put your mind only on Bhagavan. And be a one-pointed, devoted person. Okay, how to do it? Then he is talking about it in Shloka 8. Mayeva mana adhatsva, mayi buddhim niveshaya, nivasishyasi mayeva, ata urdhvam na samshaya. Realize that your mind really has two parts to it. One is the mind, the other is the intellect. Intellect and mind. Intellect makes rational decisions, mind makes emotional decisions. Try to offer both of them to me. Do not make rational decisions or seemingly rational decisions devoid of my bhakti. Make all rational decisions within the framework of my bhakti. Don't assume ownership of everything and say that I made a rational decision. Rational decision also has to be within the framework of bhakti. Mayeva mana adhatsva mayi buddhim niveshaya. Manas and buddhi, both of them, you keep on me. But if you find it very, very difficult to do, most people will not be able to do it. Even though this is the basic way of developing bhakti, most people will not be able to do it. Even this itself is a difficult thing to do. Atha chittam samadhatum na shaknoshi mai sthiram. Abhyasa yogena tato mamichhaptum dhananjaya. Next shloka. If you find yourself unable to put your mind on Bhagavan, then what you do? Start practicing it that way. First, understand why it is important to put mind and all the karmas on, offer them to Bhagavan. First, understand. Then, slowly start practicing. How? Abhyasepya samarthosi mat karma paramo bhava. If you find yourself having a hard time practicing this way, trying to put your mind and intellect on me, then mat karma paramo bhava. Whatever you do, start making a habit of saying Krishna arpanam. Start saying Shiva arpanam. Start saying, I offer this to Bhagavan. Make it mechanical. When you make it mechanical and keep on doing it, that becomes a habit. So I offer this to Bhagavan. If you cannot offer what you are thinking and what you are saying to Bhagavan, that's fine. At least what you are doing, every time you do something, you say, I offer this to Bhagavan. Then slowly after a while, that becomes a habit. After that, then whatever you say, you offer it to Bhagavan. And finally, whatever you think, you offer it to Bhagavan. That way, manasika karma, vachika karma, and kayika karma, all of them you offer to Bhagavan. That is a start. So far, we have covered 10 shlokas, half of the chapter. Any questions?
So, Guruji, if we are thinking about, if we are not thinking only pious things, the mind thinks of even bad things, even those can be offered to the Lord?
See, the idea is to eventually move from bad thoughts, bad words, and bad karma towards good thoughts, good words, and good karma. But that is a long journey. That itself is a long journey. So, if the bad thoughts come, if the bad words come, if the bad deeds happen, offer them to Bhagavan anyway, saying, I offer it to you, please give me a mind, please give me the shakti to not repeat this again. So, when you know that something is bad, not only just offering it to Bhagavan, we need to add a prayer that, please Bhagavan, give me the shakti to not repeat this again. Because we want to eliminate all the bad thoughts, bad words, and bad deeds, and gradually move towards good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. From there, we want to move to nishkamam. There is no kamam. There is no desire at all. Even good means you are expecting something good back. From there, so bad thoughts, bad words, bad deeds, all of them are bucketed together under the name papam. Good thoughts, good words, good deeds are all bucketed towards in one bucket called punyam. So from papam, we need to move to punyam, and from punyam, we need to move to nishkamam, which is desirelessness. I don't even want either bad or good karma, or bad results or good results. I don't want any result. I offer everything to Bhagavan. Let him take care of it. I have no sankalpam that I need this, I want this. I offer it to him. I have 100% confidence in his supreme intelligence. He knows what he needs to give me. I have no worry whatsoever. Even a single needle I won't ask specifically. He will give whatever he needs to give me. He is the one who created these charachara lokas. Everything, the entire creation is his. What I need, he won't know. Is he giving me everything only because I ask? No. He gives it to me anyway if I deserve. So, I have full faith in Bhagavan's ability to give what I deserve. So, I will not even continue asking anything. So, that is the final step of Karma Yoga. So, you are right. From Papa to Punya, Punya to Nishkama. Shloka 11. Athaitadapya shaktosi kartum madhyogamashritaha sarva karma phalatyagam tathakuru yathatmavan. So, if you find yourself unable to do my work, my work means, oh, what is Bhagavan's work? Any pious work, any sattvika work is Bhagavan's work. If you find yourself unable to do only Bhagavan's work, just like how you asked, I keep on doing bad things also. I keep on thinking bad thoughts also. What should I do? Offer them to me anyway first. That is what he is saying. Sarva karma phala tyagam kuru. Offer them to me first. Don't keep it. Offer them to me. Then you start moving from bad to good. So he is giving a gradual way of approaching this. First, you put your entire mind and intellect and words and deeds, everything on me. Are you not capable of it? Start practicing it. Are you not capable of practicing? Do something small. Just whatever you do, say Krishna Prabhu. Say, take whatever God's name is your favorite and say, Arpana. Offer it to him. Then slowly try to eliminate all the bad things and move towards good things. So very small steps. Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasat jnanat dhyanam vishishyate dhyanat karma phalatyagaha tyagat shantirantaram. Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasat. Abhyasat jnanam shreyaha. Abhyasam, here abhyasam means practice. So practicing something without knowing why we are doing it. That is the most basic form of practicing. We have no idea why I am doing it, but I am just doing it. Better than that is having a knowledge of why we are doing something. That is shreyohi jnanam abhyasat. Jnanat dhyanam vishishyate. Jnanat jnanam vishishyate. So here jnanam stands for just dry knowledge, just bookish knowledge of everything. It is better to have bookish knowledge than no knowledge at all. And jnanat jnanam vishishyate. Better than having bookish knowledge is the real knowledge obtained through experience and teaching. That is jnanam. Dhyanat karma phalatyagaha. Even better than that is the knowledge obtained through karma phalatyagam, by performing something and experiencing the result of it. By doing the karma phalatyagam, actually doing karma phalatyagam and experiencing the resulting mental peace. That is even better. Tyaga chantiranantaram. What it will give is mental peace. It will give. The karma yoga, the result of karma yoga is mental peace. Whether we all get jnanam or not, whether we all get moksham or not, we don't know. But the one thing we can all aim for is getting mental peace, and that is possible through this karma phala tyagaha. This is karma yoga. Karma yoga is the very basic approach that everyone should strive. Whether one develops great bhakti or not, great jnana or not, all that will come later. But karma phala tyagam is what gives the basic peace of mind. Tyagata Shantiranantaram. Then once we develop all that, let us say we developed the Karma Yoga, we developed the Karma Phala Tyaga, we developed the Bhakti, we try to develop Jnana, then what happens? Person, he is giving some examples of what that will look like for that person, or how that person looks like. Adveshta sarvabhutana maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankaraha samadukka sukha kshami santushta satatam yogi yatatma dridhanishchayaha mayyarpita manobuddhihi yo magbhaktak samepriyaha mayyarpita manobuddhihi yo madbhaktaha. For such a person who has offered his manas and buddhi and everything, adveshta sarvabhutanam, there is no need for that person to hate anybody. Maitra and Karuna, Maitri is friendship and Karuna, compassion. Compassion towards all beings naturally comes to such person. Nirmamo nirahankaraha, that nirahankaratvam automatically comes. That ego drops away. Why? Because he considers himself to be a tiny part of grand creation of Bhagavan. He doesn't have any illusion about his own grandeur in this creation. Samadukha sukha kshami. Samadukha sukha. Whether some difficulty comes in life or some happiness comes in life, he will be able to take them equally. Then next shloka. Yasmanno dvijate lokaha. Lokanno dvijate chayaha. Harsha marsha bhayo dvegaihi. Mukto yasachane priyaha. Harsha amarsha bhaya udvegaihi muktaha. One who is able to go beyond extreme happiness, extreme depression, extreme jealousy, extreme fear, extreme excitement, all these extremes come because the mind is what is playing tricks. It is saying, yes, this is such a great thing, and mind is becoming so joyous about something that is trivial. And once we know what Bhagavan is, what our role in Bhagavan's creation is, and once we start applying that Karma Yoga, offering everything to Bhagavan, then whatever happens, we'll be able to take with a stable mind, with an equanimous mind. Whether something pleasant happens or unpleasant happens also, we will be able to take it in the same stride. Then he explains a few more qualities of such a person. How to identify such a person who is developing himself in the path of bhakti. Samashatrau cha mitre cha tatha manapamanayoh, shloka 18. Shitoshna sukha dukkheshu samasanga vivarjitaha. Sanga vivarjitaha. One who is free from attachment. Inside, mentally, there is no attachment whatsoever. One who is beyond all attachments. He is traveling towards that path, becoming free of all attachments. Samashatrau cha mitre cha, one who is able to move towards a place where one really doesn't have any shatru or mitra. One who is looking at everybody the same way, because inside one is not having any attachments whatsoever. There is no shatru or there is no mitra. Tatha manapamanayoho. Similarly, when there is no shatru and there is no mitra, there is no question of being excited about somebody respecting or not excited about somebody disrespecting, because that internal attachment is gone. So for such a person, then bhaktiman me priyo naraha. Such a person is my favorite bhakta. So yetu dharmyamrutamidam, last shloka, yathoktam paryupasate sraddhadhanamat paramaha bhaktasteti pa me priyaah yetu dharmya amrutamidam. So this dharmam that I explained, the ananya bhakti towards me, the karma phala tyagam towards me, developing karma yoga, developing the saguna upasana, and slowly moving towards jnana, and developing that non-attachment within one's mind, that is called amrita dharma. That is called amrita dharma. Dharmya amritam. Yathoktam paryupasate. However, I instructed whoever starts doing the upasana of it, so whoever starts doing the practice of it, mat paramaha shraddhadhanaha. With shraddha, with extreme sincerity, whoever starts developing and starts practicing bhaktaha, te ativa me priyaha. Such people are the closest to me. I like them the most because puja to Bhagavan is not simply offering flowers and doing the ritual. The internal attachment has to go. What is the real approach to Bhagavan? The real approach to Bhagavan is karma yoga, upasana, followed by jnana yoga, which comes only through that vairagya bhavana, the attachment, the removal of internal attachment. Why he is giving this message? Because now from 13th chapter onwards to 18th chapter, he is going to really go into the explanation of jnana yoga. This is mostly Vedanta explanation. How many types of attachment are there? How to remove one's attachment? How to develop the daivi sampat, which is the divine qualities? How to get rid of asuri sampat, the asuric qualities, the demonic qualities? What is the difference between them? What is sattvaguna? What is rajoguna? What is tamoguna? What is the difference between them? How to develop one's viveka and vairagya? That is all going to be explained in the next 6 chapters, ending with what is called the Moksha Sannyasa Yoga, which is the real instruction about achieving moksha liberation at the end. So that is why he is not only giving the summary of the first 11 chapters in this chapter, he is also paving way and putting the foundation for the teaching that is going to come next. That is why this chapter is considered one of the most important chapters in Bhagavad Gita. If you have only 5 minutes to chant Bhagavad Gita every day, chant Bhakti Yoga. And if you have only 5 minutes to understand one shloka of Bhagavad Gita every day, you first start with understanding Bhakti Yoga. Do one shloka every day and try to read the meaning of Bhakti Yoga. And in time, you will be able to memorize Bhakti Yoga, chant it whenever you need to, and really relish it. And once you are able to relish it, if you can start following what Bhakti Yoga is teaching, there is nothing like it. That is the real path to spiritual upliftment. So this way, Krishna is summarizing all the teaching that has gone so far. So, any other questions? Okay, we'll stop. Om Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partho Dharutraha Vedana Sarvam Shri Krishna Arpanamastu. So we are looking at Shloka 9 in Bhajagovindam. Satsangatve Sangatvam Nisangatve Nirmohatvam Nirmohatve Chalatvam Chalatatve Jivanmanti. So after explaining all the temptations sadhaka can get into in his life or her life, and highlighting the risks and difficulties faced if one gets into the influence of such temptations. Now Acharya is answering a presumed question. After the previous shloka, kate kanta kaste putraha, the question is, okay, now I understand that I should not be falling prey to such temptations. How do I do it? What is the way for me to get away from those temptations? I know those attachments are not good for me, but I have no other way. I am attached to them. I am powerless to get away from such attachments. What should I do? Assuming that the Shishya is asking that question at that point, now Acharya is answering. What is the solution to that question, that problem? And the solution is satsangaha. The only solution he is giving, he is not giving jnana as the solution, he is not giving bhakti as the solution, he is not giving japa as the solution, he is not giving dhyana, he is not giving mantra, he is not giving puja, he is not giving some kind of a yoga as the solution. What is the solution Acharya is giving to get away from such influence? Satsangaha is the solution. And what is satsangaha? Attachment with anything or anyone that is going to take us from untruth to truth is satsangaha. Sat means truth. Sat also means good. Satvika comes from sat only. Satyam comes from sat only. So, that is good and something that is true is sat. And anything, any attachment, any association that takes us from everything that is false, everything that is temporary, everything that is bad for us, to everything that is good for us, everything that is permanent, everything that is shreyas, which is permanent happiness, that is satsangaha. And there are many types of such satsanga. What is the only sadvastu according to Tattva Bodha? What is sat and what is asat? Atma only is satma. Everything is. When atma is the only sat padartham, brahma satyam, jagat
nitya.
Brahma only satyam. Brahman is the only satyavastu. Everything else, atma, satyam, tadanyatra, sarvam, mithyeti. That is atma, anatma, vivekaha. So, what is that association that is going to give us the real experience of sat, real experience of truth? What is that satsanga? If I do any of these activities that are generally mentioned in satsanga, is that really going to get me to the truth? The answer is only partially. No. Only partially. Why? Because they are all based on karma. They are all based on karma. And karma, unless first of all it is converted into karma yoga, karma can never give any happiness, forget about moksha, it cannot even give a real happiness. Only when karma is converted into karma yoga, then the real taste of happiness starts pouring in. Then from that karma yoga, upasana, upasana yoga, jnana, jnana yoga sadhana, jnana yoga phalam. That is moksha. Final jnana yoga phalam is moksha. So any amount of karma done cannot be giving the ultimate sat, ultimate happiness, ultimate truth. Why? karma is always associated with asat. Asat being zero, even if you do perform infinite amount of karma, you multiply it with zero, then ultimately it will result in zero only. Unless you multiply it with one, which is sat, it cannot be giving you any real happiness. And that sat is only atma vastu. Atma vastu cannot be obtained by any amount of karma. Why? Because atma is beyond the senses, beyond the three shariams, beyond the senses, beyond the panchakoshas, beyond the mind, beyond the intellect, beyond the antahkarana chatushtayam. Something that is beyond all these has to be attained. The activity that needs to be performed also needs to be beyond all this. Now, for doing anything like bhakti, puja, yoga, dhyana, japa, mantra, all these things, what is needed? The panchendriyas are needed, the karmendriyas are needed, the jnanendriyas are needed, mind is needed, intellect is needed, all these are needed. And something that is being performed continuously with these things, how can it take us to something that is beyond all these? At the best, what it can give is the required qualification that is going to qualify us to take us beyond these. That is called sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. Equipped with that sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, we need to do something else. Something else must be done for us to go from asat to sat. That is called real satsanga. Until now, it is asatsanga only. No matter how great it is, this is all asatsanga only. Why? Because it is not giving me the real association of that sadvastu, of that satyavastu. At best, it is giving me the required qualification to go towards the satyavastu, which is the sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. Great. So, I will perform all these and develop that sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. But what is that attachment, that sangha, that is going to take me from this asat to sat? What is that? The attachment is the attachment to jnana only. Only jnana can take me from asat to sat. Beyond acquiring the sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, from sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, how can one go to moksha? What is the path? Only jnana yoga, jnana can take us to sat, atma vastu. Why? Because atma is sat, chit, anandaha. Satyam, jnanam, anantam. When the atma swarupam is jnana swarupam, only jnanam can identify it. Nothing else can identify that atma swarupam. That is why the only path to atma, atma sakshatkaram, is said to be shravana, manana, and nidhidhyasana of jnanam that is given by what? Jnanam that is given by?
Guru.
Guru. The jnanam that is given by the guru, if one does the shravana manana nidhidhyasanam of such jnanam, that is the only path that is going to take us from asat to sat. Why? Because only jnana can take us from asat to sat. And that jnana can be given by shastras, but we don't have the capacity to go unlock the shastras. In the last class, I told you how the shastras are locked, and the key is what is called the Guru Parampara. So through the key of Guru Parampara, if one can unlock the shastras, the jnana in the shastras, through the help of that jnana, one can reach from asat to sat. that is the real satsanga. Everything else is satsanga, but in a temporary sense. In the permanent sense of satsanga, the satsanga is jnana sanga, the attachment to the acquisition and the reflection of brahma jnana, atma jnana, the knowledge. Only that is the real satsanga. Now, how to get to that satsanga? The only way to get to that satsanga is through the teaching of the guru. And what is the guru teaching? The guru is not teaching the jnanam about all the vastus in the jagat. He is not doing that. He is not teaching physics, he is not teaching chemistry, he is not teaching English, he is not teaching about all the rituals and everything. What is he teaching at this point? That is Brahma Vidya only. Vedanta Shastra only. Upanishads. What the Brahma Sutras are saying, what the Upanishads are saying, what the Prasthana Trayam is saying, what is the greatest teaching of all the Shastras? That is what the Guru is teaching. That is the ultimate jnanam. And attaching oneself to that jnanam is the satsanga. So consequently, attaching oneself to the teachings of the Guru is the real satsanga. Or attaching oneself to the Guru is real satsanga. Because the Guru is giving something that no one else in this world is able to give. Although we love so many people in our life, at best, what is it that they can give? At best, what is it that they can give? Think about
either happiness or unhappiness. That's it.
Temporary happiness.
Either unhappiness mostly and then some happiness.
Some happiness or mostly unhappiness, some happiness. But that happiness that everybody else gives, is that permanent or impermanent?
Temporary.
No one else in life, no matter how close they are, no matter how much we love them, can give us a way to achieve permanent happiness. Including the closest family and relatives that we have. That is why the attachment with the Guru, the Sangha with the Guru, is supposed to be higher, in fact, highest than any other attachment in life. Why? Because at best, they are giving some happiness. Most of the relationships won't even give happiness. Even if they give happiness, that is temporary happiness only. Why the happiness derived from anything in this existence is called temporary happiness, we have seen previously. It suffers from, because both the entities are temporary, the minds are changing, all those analysis we have done. Why? The happiness that we derive from material things is temporary, it cannot be permanent, we have seen. So, the teaching of the Guru is the only thing that is giving us a pathway to such happiness that no other relationship, no other attachment in our life is able to give. That is why this attachment, this sangha is called satsangha. Everything else is asatsangha only. That is one point. Then, think about all the relationships that you have. Social relationships, family relationships, relatives, friends, closest family. Who among those relationships is pulling down you or pulling you down into bandham, and which one of them is pushing you towards moksha? Is there any one relationship that you can name that pulls you pushes you towards moksha versus pulling you down towards bandha. If you look at all the loops that we have, every single relationship that we have is pulling us towards bandha only, bondage only. There is only one relationship that is pushing us away from bandha towards moksha. What is that relationship? Relationship
with
the attachment
with Guru.
Guru is the only entity in our life that is pushing us away from attachment towards a detachment, towards liberation. Every other relationship is pulling us only towards attachment and bondage. Second, that is the second reason why the attachment, the Sangha with the Guru is called the Sat-Sangha. I said the last class I'll talk about the specifically the Guru Sangha in terms of the Satsangha. So I will tell you a few things. So I've told you a couple of things. Why the attachment with the Guru is the Satsangha, rest is all Asat Sangha only. Then let's look at this. All the relationships that we have developed in this life or any life for that matter, they are all rooted in some sort of a selfishness. Everyone is developing a relationship with you, and you are developing a relationship with others with some selfish motive. There is no pure, unselfish relationship in this world. Even though we call it an unselfish relationship, there is an underlying selfishness. I gave you the example from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where Yajnavalkya gave that teaching to Maitreyi, where he explained how even the bond between a wife and a husband, a son and a father, a daughter and a father, they are all rooted in one's own selfish happiness. We love the family because they give us happiness. Once they start giving us unhappiness, the strength of that love starts diminishing. And it comes to a point where we cannot even bear the presence of that person, whom we once thought was the most lovable person in the world, now becomes the most unbearable person. Why? Because that person has stopped giving us what we think is happiness. So unless that person gives us some sort of a happiness, we cannot develop a relationship with him or her or it. Anybody, doesn't matter. So all relationships are rooted in selfishness. When you develop a relationship with someone, they are also evaluating that relationship. How is this relationship going to benefit me? And if it benefits them, then only they will continue the relationship. If it does not benefit them in any way, they will not continue that relationship. They will slowly move away from that relationship. Every relationship that you are maintaining in your life is intact only because it is mutually beneficial. It is mutually beneficial. You are gaining something, they are also gaining something. Take friendship, take relatives, take family, everything for that matter is intact only because everyone is trying to gain something from that relationship. Once they realize they are losing everything from that relationship, they try to actively get away from that relationship. You don't want to continue relationships that keep on giving you dukkham, no matter how close that relationship is. you want to get away from it. But why is Guru allowing the Shishya to come and learn from him? What is it the Guru is gaining here? Shishya is gaining a lot. Shishya is gaining, hopefully, the Atma Jnanam and being able to cross this samsara. But what is Guru gaining? What is Guru gaining? By
nothing.
Giving all the knowledge one has to the Shishya and helping Shishya cross Ajnanam into Jnanam. It's not only what the Guru is gaining, what can the Guru gain? Is there anything that the Guru can gain from the association with the Shishya? Is he looking for money? Is he looking for some kind of a fame? Is he looking for respect? Is he expecting anything? Because if he is expecting all these things, then he cannot be a Brahma Vidya Guru. Because Brahma Vidya starts from Vairagyam. Brahma Vidya starts from Vivekam. Brahma Vidya starts from Mumukshutvam. If he is expecting something in return from the Shishya, then that cannot be a Brahma Vidya Guru. So in this case, assuming the Guru is a true Brahma Vidya Guru, what is it that the Guru can gain out of that relationship? Even in a relationship with our own parents, after giving everything that they have, the parents are at least expecting some love from the children, from some respect from the children, some affection from the children, some kind of a attachment. At least they will say, if not anything, at least call me and say hello every week, every 10 days, at least every month. That's what their expectation is. But Guru, is Guru saying anything like that? Guru does not say it. The only expectation that the Guru has is that you should gain knowledge and you should achieve the same freedom that he has achieved. In terms of a selfish expectation, there is absolutely zero expectation from the Guru that the Shishya will give me something, he will grant me something, I will benefit this way from the Shishya. Absolutely nothing.
But Guru Garu, one question here. He becomes only Guru when he starts teaching or spreading the knowledge he has to the others, right?
Right.
So that's one kind of selfishness or something on the part of Guru, right? I mean, because he becomes Guru only because he starts teaching it or spreading the knowledge, and he will be in the Guru Parampara only because of that.
His desire is not to be in the Guru Parampara. He doesn't think that, okay, I need to be a part of the Guru Parampara. I need to attain some sort of a Peetham. His only desire is, I have achieved this grand freedom that I am enjoying now. Let me spread it wide and far and help so many people who are helpless and who are ignorant to achieve the same freedom, to lift them out of bondage into freedom. Whether they consider him Guru, whether they give him a Guru Peetham, or whether they consider him as a part of the Guru Parampara, that is all up to the Shishyas. For their welfare, if they want to do it, well and good. But the Guru is least bothered whether the Shishya is doing it or not. For him, I am only talking about the Brahma Vidya Guru here. Other types of Guru, Dharma Guru and all those things, those are different. When it comes to teaching Brahma Vidya, When it comes to teaching Vedanta, the expectation on the Guru's part is none. Zero whatsoever. If you listen and you gain, it is your gain. If you don't listen and you don't gain, you will stay where you are. The Guru is not gaining anything. The Guru is not losing anything. In fact, he is spending all the time and effort to teach and uplift the shishyas because of only one and one reason: compassion. Unlimited, unadulterated compassion. That is the only reason. Why he has to develop that compassion? Because that compassion is a byproduct of the jnana that the guru has achieved. In the Bhakti Yoga, we have seen earlier, what is that sloka? Nirvaira sarva bhuteshu. For every living being, he shows compassion. And specially for the sentient beings who are capable of gaining this knowledge and achieving the same freedom that the guru is enjoying, he shows even more compassion. Because other beings, whether they are able to understand it or not, here are some people who are at least interested in it, who are capable of listening it, and if they are able to follow it, they will become free themselves and cross all bondage. And that too is not an expectation of the guru. That is the intention of the guru. With that intention, he freely gives the knowledge. But he is not expecting, okay, X should gain this thing, Y should gain this thing, only then I consider myself successful. He does not measure himself like that. I will give freely. I will give the knowledge freely. If someone gains it, their luck. If someone doesn't gain it, then that is their prarabdha. They will have a lot more journey to continue. So this way, the guru has absolutely no expectations whatsoever. So this is the only relationship in which at least one party, I'm not saying both parties, the shishya may have a lot of expectations. The shishya may come with a big list of things. If these things are matched, then I will allow him to be my guru. If these things don't match, then I will go shopping for another guru. So the shishya may have his own criteria. Okay, this is how I want my guru to be. This is how I expect the guru to be. If I am getting that, I will stay with this guru. If I am not getting that, I will not stay with this guru. So all those things the shishya may have. The guru has nothing. If you are interested, if you want to develop yourself, if you want to develop the sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, if you want to grow, you come, I will teach. He will only see, look at the sincerity of the shishya. He will only look at the shraddha of the shishya. Do you have devotion towards the words of the guru? Do you have devotion to the words of the shastra? Then come here. Because that is the only thing required. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, idam te na tapaskaya na bhaktaya kadachana. If one is not devoted to the teaching, then don't teach. If you are internally devoted or not, the guru may not know. But at least you show sincerity in terms of the learning, then guru will teach without any expectation in return. So this is the only relationship in which there is a party that has zero expectations, zero selfishness, which you cannot find in any other relationships, including relationships with parents, relationships with kids, relationships with wife, etc. That is why Sangha with Guru is only called a Satsangaha.
So gaining this knowledge is also like a selfish reason for me, right?
For you, it may be the selfish reason. So you may be thinking, okay, if the guru is teaching X, Y, and Z, I will stay with him. If he is not able to teach me X, Y, and Z, that is not my definition of the guru, so I will leave. But that is how every shishya starts, because he wants to gain something. But eventually, what separates the adhama shishyas, madhyama shishyas, and uttama shishyas is the uttama shishyas realize that just the presence of the guru is enough for me to gain my knowledge. I don't need to actually sit and listen. I don't expect Guru to actually teach me. I gave you the example of Totakacharya, right?
Totakacharya, yes, correct.
Yeah, yes.
What Totakacharya yeah. are doing versus what
the washing other clothes and everything, but not
right. So he didn't have the expectation that, okay, every day he needs to cover X, Y, and Z lessons. If he is not covering it, he is not my guru. That's not what he is saying. What, that's not what he is thinking. For me, the presence of the guru itself is enough. That will take me beyond. So one such shishya who develops that kind of a mindset is called the Uttamottama Shishya. But the other Shishyas, they will have some kind of an expectation. Let us say the guru says, okay, for the next 5 years, I'm not going to teach anything. I'm not going to take any lessons. I'm not going to take any classes whatsoever. Next 5 years, no classes. After the end of 5 years, how many Shishyas remain and have the same reverence for the guru? 90% of the Shishyas may have forgotten about that guru and moved on. So they do come with some sort of a selfish expectation, but depending on the mental state of the Shishya. If one wants to become a Uttama Shishya, that mental state has to develop. And that will only happen through Bhagavan's grace, Guru's grace, all that will be there. But every Shishya will start with some expectation, some selfish expectation. Whether one grows into a position where he has no expectation from the guru. I don't have any expectation from the guru. I don't even expect my guru to teach me. My guru is there, that is enough for me. That's all I need. My guru is there. That is the biggest support I have. So if one develops into that position, then Shishya is also showing that there is no expectation from his side, then that becomes a sampurna satsanga. What started as a partial satsanga will develop into a sampurna satsanga, because the Shishya also has grown to a state where he is not expecting anything. That is why you see Dakshinamurti just sitting there, Mauna Vyakhya, Prakatita Brahma Tattvam Yuvanam. He is not saying, he is not discoursing, he is not doing Upanyasa after Upanyasa. Dakshinamurti is just sitting there, the Sanaka Sanandadi Shishyas are just sitting there, Mauna Vyakhya is going on. For years together, Guru is just sitting there, Shishyas are just sitting there. Why? They have developed themselves to such a state where the Guru doesn't need to give discourse after discourse after discourse for them to understand the Guru. The Guru just is there. That's it. That is the highest satsanga. That is why we take the example of the Dakshinamurti and do namaskaram to the Dakshinamurti all the time.
One question, Guru Garu.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, like when all are attained at the same level, is it that is there is no Sangha at all?
The Sangha is there, but it is happening at a more mental level. Because the mind of the Shishya is so evolved that the physical communication between the Guru and the Shishya doesn't need to happen. The Guru doesn't need to open his mouth and say something. The Shishya is automatically understanding what the Guru's teaching is, automatically understanding what the Guru's sankalpa is, automatically understanding what the Guru is communicating. Why? Because the Shishya, through the sadhana, has lifted himself to such a state where he is in tune with the Guru. The Sangam, the communication is happening, but not how we think it is happening.
That is the Sampurna Satsanga.
Anything else is Asampurna Satsanga. But still, this Sangha is the best of the Satsanga. Then, next. If you think about all the other relationships in life, what is it that they can give, the two things that we expect out of every relationship. One is happiness, which we talked about. The other is auspiciousness. Everything needs to be good. Everything that we derive from the relationship needs to be good. Not only what we think of it as happy, but it should also do good to us. It should also do good to us. Why? That is why one is called Mudam, second is called Mangalam. Mudam and Mangalam. Mudam is what we think of as happiness from that relationship. And Mangalam is what we actually derive from that relationship, which is good for us, which is a shreyas for us, which uplifts us in our life. And again, if you analyze, all other relationships may be able to give mudam, but not always mangalam. Nobody is truly thinking of of giving auspiciousness to you only unconditionally, without any expectation, wishing auspiciousness for you, giving auspiciousness to you, whether consciously or unconsciously. Why? Because it is tainted with the tinge of selfishness. When that is tainted with the tinge of selfishness, that auspiciousness cannot be unselfish, cannot be pure.
So, Guruvar, even like for a mother towards a child, even that applies, Guruvar? Completely?
Yeah. I gave you the example, right? So the expectation that the mother has towards the child is that the mother doesn't expect any big reward from the child, any big riches from the child. She doesn't expect a $1 million check from the child, but at the least she expects a smile from the child. She expects a hello from the child. She expects a respect from the child. She expects a return love from the child. So they expect all these things as parents, which is natural. But Guru doesn't even have that expectation also. Guru says, here is the vast amount of knowledge I have. I will pour it to you. If you take it, good for you. If you don't take it, I don't lose anything. If you want the best of the benefits, then it to how you treat that relationship. But there is no necessity that you have to return that love and respect and expectation to the Guru, because there the Guru is not even expecting anything, unlike mother or father. That is why this relationship is beyond that.
Okay, Guru.
Then,
is there danger of a Shishya getting attached to the Guru also, right? I mean, you are saying that everything comes with a bandham. Only thing that Guru is the only one where your detachment is being taught.
Right. So that attachment is the best attachment, because what is Acharya saying? Satsangatve nisangatvam. If you identify the best satsangam in your life, that is going to lead you to
give you the okay.
So think about it and sit and think about what other sangam, what other attachment is going to give you nisangatvam. If there is any other relationship that is going to give you nisangatvam, then by all means pursue it.
There's nothing like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, then next step. Why, again, another reason why this Guru Sangha is the Satsangha, because now we know that all this jnana, how did Guru get it? Guru got it from his Guru. How did his Guru get it? From his Guru. And so on. We can trace it all the way to Bhagavan himself. And Bhagavan just did not give this knowledge to somebody. Bhagavan gave this knowledge to whoever is the first guru through the form of the shastras, in the form of shastras. Bhagavan did not sit and teach that guru. For example, we say, Sadashiva Samarambham Vyasa Shankara Madhyamam. So how did Vedavyasa get it? Did Bhagavan sit and teach Vedavyasa? He gave Vedavyasa all this knowledge in the form of Vedas. Narayanam Padmabhuvam Vasishtam Shaktincha Tasutra Parasharamcha. So Narayana gave it to Padmabhuva Brahma, Brahma gave it to Vasishta, Vasishta gave it to Shakti, Shakti gave it to Parashara, Parashara gave it to Vyasa, Shuka, Gaudapada, Maha, like that. So in this parampara that the Bhagavan started, Bhagavan did not sit and give this knowledge like how this our gurus are doing. How he gave it in the form of shastras. So one might ask, why I should sit with this guru and form this, what is called this satsanga? Why can't I directly go to the shastras and learn it from there? This way I will avoid this sangam also and directly get to nissanga. Then the answer is, number one, you are forgetting the key. I told you the shastras are the treasure chest and the key is the guru parampara. So very first thing is, you are trying to open the treasure chest without the key, which is not possible. So let us say, even if you are able to open it, to be able to understand those shastras all by yourself without the help of this vast guru parampara that has dedicated its life towards the study of the shastras in the proper way, with the proper guidance, if you are sidestepping all that and trying to approach the shastras yourself, what is the chance that you are actually going to get the benefit of the shastras, the intended benefit of the shastras? Shastra itself says it is next to null, none. Next to none. Shastra even gives an example. If you want to sidestep this and get moksha through the Shastra Jnanam by yourself, there is one way to do it. There is one way to do it. If you can do that, then you can approach the Shastra yourself and get all the Jnanam that is contained in the Shastras without the help of anybody. And what is the condition? This is actually given in the Upanishad itself. This is Veda that is giving the example. It says, if you take the entire sky and roll it like a mat and bring it down to the earth, then you will be able to approach the Shastras and Upanishads and Jnana yourself and achieve Brahmajnana. So in other words, Veda itself is saying it is impossible for any being to literally approach the Shastra by oneself without the help of the Guru Parampara. That is why Shankaracharya also in many, many, many different places, in many different bhashyas, he says, he cautions, saying, Shastrajnyopi Svatantrena Brahmanveshanam na kuryat. Shastrajnyopi, you may be knowing the Shastra, you may have learnt all the Shastras yourself, you may be very well versed in all the Shat Shastras. I know Vyakaranam, I know Mimamsa, I know Vedanta, I know the Purva Mimamsa, I know the Niruktam, I know all these Kalpa, Jyotisha, everything I know. I have mastered all the Vedas. But what about Brahmajnanam? Shastrajnyopi Svatantrena Brahmanveshanam Nakuryat. Svatantriyam, with Svatantriyam, with independent approach, one should never do Brahmanveshanam. Why? Because even though you may have the bookish knowledge, you don't have the practical knowledge that has been gained through the combined experience of so many acharyas. That is why, do not approach Shastra by yourself. So if I cannot approach Shastra by myself, and only the Shastra Jnanam will give me moksha, what is the only other way available to me? Approaching the Guru only. So this is the again only relationship, this is the only Sangha attachment where the direct Shastra Jnanam that is capable of giving us moksha is made available to me in a form that I can understand, in a form that I can absorb. No other relationship in my life can grant me this advantage. Therefore, the Sangha that I develop with the Guru is the highest satsang. Then, next one. Let us assume that all other relationships are unselfish also. There are relationships in our life that are not selfish. They can give us whatever we ask for. Let us assume that such a relationship exists in my life. That can give me what I require. First of all, such a relationship does not exist. But let us assume that such a relationship exists where I can just go and ask and they can give me what I require. And if we think about what is it that they can give, what is the best thing that they can give, the best thing that they can give, again, is only going to be of a temporary nature. Maybe they can give money, maybe they can give some emotional help, maybe they can give some kind of happiness, maybe they can give support, maybe they can give some social status, maybe they can give some kind of a power in society. All these things that are the relationships that I have, they can give, ultimately is temporary only. And if I sit and think there is only one Sangha, one attachment relationship that is going to give me a dhanam that is going to be permanent in nature, that is going to give me a happiness that is never ever going to go away from me. For every other dhanam that I can take from other relationships in my life, that happiness derived from that dhanam will go away from me one time or the other. Even if somebody gives me $1 billion, that happiness is going to go away one day. But the happiness that comes along with the Brahma Jnana that the Guru gives, that happiness will never go away, because the Swarupam of such Jnanam is Anandam only. After that, there is no Dukkham whatsoever. So there is no other relationship that can give me something that is going to keep me happy forever, other than the Jnanam given by the Guru. Because everything else, they themselves are temporary. What they are going to grant me is itself temporary. So Dhanam, the value of the Dhanam, normally value of the Dhanam is measured by how much happiness can it give the person that is taking the Dhanam and for how long. If it is going to give happiness for a long time, that is considered the great dhanam. Annadhanam is great, but annadhanam will give me happiness for only that 4 hours or 5 hours. We have the shloka, annadhanam mahadhanam vidyadhanam mahattaram annena kshanika truptihi yavajjivanti vidyaya. That is why vidyadhanam, whoever gives us vidya, we call it the greatest dhanam. Why? Because that happiness we can derive for the whole life. But what about Brahma Vidyadhanam? If normal Vidyadhanam, physics Vidyadhanam, chemistry Vidyadhanam itself is so great, What about Brahma Vidya Danam? Brahma Vidya Danam is not going to give me happiness in this life, next life, beyond next life. It is going to make it such that there is no life after that. Only happiness remains. Only Anandam remains. How great that Danam should be, that the Guru is giving without any expectation whatsoever. Can there be any comparison to such Danam that the Guru is giving? There cannot be. That is another reason why this Satsanga is called Guru Sangha. It cannot lower at any time. It cannot decline the happiness that I am receiving. And all this is happening because of what? The unconditional mercy of the Guru. Unconditional compassion of the Guru. Without any expectation. That is why the Guru is given a status in life that no other person is given. Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwarah. Guru is called Sakshat Param Brahma. Beyond the Trimurtis, beyond Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Param Brahma. Why? Because he is giving you the knowledge of that Param Brahma. He is giving you the knowledge of that Param Brahma. That is why Guru is called Param Brahma. So, surrendering to such Guru, associating with such Guru, developing the attachment to such Guru is the highest satsanga that one can develop. And if by Bhagavan's grace, by Guru's grace, if we have that satsanga, how fortunate we should consider ourselves to be. That is the only satsanga that is going to lead us to nissangatvam. No other sangha in life is going to lead us to nissangatvam. That nissangatvam is going to lead to nirmohatvam. That moham, delusion is gone. Why? Because of the grace of the Guru, the jnanam given by the Guru, that delusion is gone. When the delusion nirmohatve happens, nishchalatvam. There is no disturbance in the mind. Why? Because the Guru's jnanam will give us the way to achieve permanent happiness. That nishchalatvam, that non-disturbance in the mind, that permanent happiness is called jivanmuktihi. That is the mukti, moksha that we achieve in this very, very life. And that benefit that we derive from the Guru entirely depends on the bhavana that the Shishya has towards the Guru. The Guru is just pouring everything. The Guru is just giving everything that one has. And how much benefit the disciple, the Shishya, derive, it depends on the bhavana of the Shishya or the approach of the Shishya. I give you this example all the time. Guru's grace, Guru's teaching is like the rain that is falling. It falls equally everywhere. If you put a bigger vessel, you catch more water. If you put a smaller vessel, you catch little water. If you keep a small spoon, you catch only little water. If you keep a drum, you catch a lot of water. It is not the fault of the rain that you could not catch more water. It is the fault of the choice that you made in putting the right container in the rain. So each of these containers is the Shishya. So we have to determine ourselves which type of a container we want to be. Then the grace and the teaching flow that way. Most of you may know this shloka. Mantre, Tirthe, Dvije, Daive, दैवज्ञे भेषजे गुरौ यादृशी भावना तस्य सिद्धिर्भवति तादृशी. इन मंत्र तीर्थ द्विज इज द ब्राह्मण दट कम्स टू डू पूजा फॉर अस. दैवे इन भगवान, दैवज्ञे इन ज्योतिष, एंड भेषजे इन मेडिसिन, एंड गुरौ इन गुरु. यादृशी भावना तस्य सिद्धिर्भवति तादृशी. द वेरी द मोस्ट इंपॉर्टेंट थिंग that determines what kind of benefit we derive from these is what bhavana we have. If we think of them as just a limited thing, the result we get is also limited. If we approach it with unlimited faith and unlimited surrender, then the result also will be unlimited. Just remember the rain example I gave. So that is the so how to develop this satsanga depends on the approach of the shishya. And how a shishya should approach the guru for satsanga, it is given in many shastras. Bhagavad Gita gives it, Guru Gita gives it, all those shastras give it. And we are taught also how to approach the guru for jnana. That is why Guru Gita ends with the shloka, na guru radhikam tattvam, na gurur adhikam tapah, tattvajnanat param nasti, tasmai shri gurave namaha. Na gurur adhikam tattvam. You can understand the tattvam of Bhagavan. You can understand Bhagavan's nature. And you can understand the limit of Bhagavan's nature. But na gurur adhikam tattvam. But guru tattvam, there is no greater tattvam than guru tattvam. Na gurur adhikam tapah. You can do any tapas, any puja, any upasana, but guru upasana, na guru radhikam tapaha, guru upasana, there is nothing greater than that. Tattva jnanat param nasti. Even if you are able to understand the tattvam that is in the shastras and of Bhagavan's tattvam, guru tattva jnanat param nasti. It is not easy to understand the tattvam of the guru. That's why tasmai shri gurave namaha. There is no other greeting for the guru, only namaha. So that is why this is the greatest satsanga one can have. So I hope that every one of you has developed or can develop such satsanga with any guru that you prefer, any guru that you think is the right guru for you. Hopefully that guru comes along in your life and you are able to develop that satsanga and take that satsanga from adhama sangha to uttamottama sangha and achieve what is intended for you in this life. So with this, I want to conclude this shloka. Satsangatve nisangatvam nisangatve nirmohatvam nirmohatve nischalatatvam nischalatve jivanmuktihi. So I'm spending more time because this Dvadashamancharika is given by Bhagavan Shankaracharya. So next 10, 11, 12 shlokas maybe I will explain in a little detail. Then after that we'll probably go a little faster because Dvadasha Manjarika ends there, and after that Chaturdasha Manjarika starts, and Chaturdasha Manjarika is mostly a variation, repetition of what is taught by Acharya in Dvadasha Manjarika. So that is why I'm taking my time to explain each shloka in Dvadasha Manjarika in detail. After Dvadasha Manjarika, we'll probably go a little faster. Okay, so we'll stop here. Any other questions? Okay, we'll stop. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadavasishyate. सहनावतु
श्रीगुरु नमः हरिः ओम्।